from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, some 2,600 children, some as young as five, still remain separated from their parents as the Trump administration faces a court-ordered deadline of next Thursday for reunification. A federal judge, frustrated with the slow pace, ordered a temporary stop to all deportations of parents on Monday. We get the latest on the family separation crisis. Then at 9:30, efforts to address the black infant mortality rate are paying more attention to the physical effects of racism as an explanation for why black babies are twice as likely to die before their first birthday as white babies. We learn more. Join us. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, sitting in today for Michael Krasny. We begin the hour with an update on the family separation crisis, what children are saying about the conditions they faced, and a couple of new developments already this week. A San Diego federal judge is frustrated with the Trump administration as it struggles to reunite another 2,600 kids separated from their parents under Trump's zero-tolerance policy. The judge has ordered a halt to all deportations of reunited families for at least a week. He did this on Monday. Meantime, a bill introduced yesterday by Democrats, including California Senator Kamala Harris, would require the administration to immediately reunite children separated from parents and establish a federal office to oversee the whole process. For the latest, we're joined by Julie Small. She's a reporter for KQED's Criminal Justice Hub and Immigration Hub. Julie Small, good morning.
Good morning, Mina.
Thanks for being here. And Alan Gomez is an immigration reporter with USA Today. Good morning, Alan Gomez.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here as well. Alan Gomez, just to recap, so the San Diego federal judge, Dana Sabraw, ordered the Trump administration to reunite all kids with their parents by July 26th. That's next Thursday. And those under age five had to be reunited with their parents last Tuesday. Is that finished, essentially?
Yeah, that's now finished. They ended up reuniting about 57 of those kids who were under five. And that process ended up kind of being the test run for this much larger group of 2,500 kids between ages 5 and 17 that now have to be reunited by, like you said, by July 26th. And through a series of court hearings and orders that he's written, safe to say that the judge is losing his patience a bit with the government. He said he was exasperated. He accused them of trying to just provide themselves cover in everything that they were doing. And he's really pushing them really hard now to remain focused and meet that July 26th deadline.
Yes, it's a notable shift in tone because initially the deadline to meet for the kids under age five, the government actually missed it by a couple of days. And the ACLU said that they wanted the government to pay for mental health counseling as punishment. But Judge Sabraw chose not to do that, is my understanding. But now it sounds like he's no longer feeling like there's such a good faith effort happening here.
Exactly. Initially, the judge, he was very complimentary of the government. They had missed their deadline by a couple of days, but during the court hearing that the day afterwards, he said, it's okay, it's clear that you guys are working in good faith and that everybody's working as hard as they can. But then over the weekend, what happened is an official from the Department of Health and Human Services filed a notice with the court pretty much declaring that the judge, in speeding up these reunifications, was putting these children at risk, saying that he was ordering too fast a process, that they needed more time to A, verify that each child that was being reunited with their parent and not somebody else, not a human smuggler, and B, that the person they were being reunited with the parent, was not facing state or federal criminal charges, was not a danger to the child. And as the judge put it after reading that, it appeared that the Department of Health and Human Services was trying to provide cover for, as the judge put it, for the lack of foresight and infrastructure necessary to remedy the harms caused by their own family separation program. So he was very upset with them. He agreed to a request from the ACLU to halt all deportations for at least a week of these parents. That was kind of a sort of punishment as well, but basically saying, look, you've got to stop deporting people right now, You need to focus on the task at hand, and you need to get going and make sure that all these reunifications happen by the 26th.
And when you say deporting the parents, do you mean the parents without their kids, or once they've been reunited with their family, with their children again?
Well, and that's one of the surprising things that's come of all this. Everybody was kind of wondering, okay, what would happen once these family units were reunited? Some people thought the government would just kind of give them a break and say, okay, we're going to let you all out on bond while you await your deportation hearings. But what's been happening and what the ACLU was worried about was that the government would reunite these family units and very quickly move to deport them and give these parents an impossible decision to make, whether they get deported alone and leave their child behind to try to stay in the country, or whether they get deported together. And the worry was that they were giving them very, very little time. I mean, in some cases, just a matter of hours to make that decision with not that much information, without access to any sort of legal counsel, and that those were going to be fast-tracked very quickly. And that's why the judge said, okay, we need to put a pause on this. We need to give these folks time to figure out their options and make a more informed decision about their future.
And Julie Small, KQED's criminal justice and immigration reporter, you've been reporting from San Diego this week, as well as before. What are we learning about the experiences of the children as they are now being essentially freed from their detention and being reunited with kids? What are we learning about the conditions they faced?
Well, I think, are you referring to a filing this week in the Central District Court in California, which statements were collected from kids and families, talking about the conditions at the border, not about these in the ICE detention centers where they're being reunited necessarily, but actually when they were first detained. Attorneys and volunteers went and interviewed over 200 parents and their children, and heard repeated reports of them being held with being given frozen sandwiches that they couldn't eat with black meat, and also putrid water that they couldn't drink, or when they did drink it, they got ill, freezing conditions. All of this is stuff we've been hearing about for years, but it apparently has intensified since the government started this zero-tolerance policy and is bringing so many more people, especially kids and parents, into detention at the border.
So what you're talking about is there are already kids there, and then this additional influx of kids has strained the resources even further.
Right, and while these facilities along the border aren't meant to hold people for very long, but what they're doing now is they're trying to keep people from getting into ICE and into the country, so they're sort of keeping them at the border longer to see if they can deport them from there. Mm. And so you have families staying in these conditions for 6 days, longer than they had in the past, and just many, many more people. There were also reports of, there'd be three mattresses in a cell with 18 people, so they had to take turns on who was going to sleep on the cement floor. And it was freezing, and they didn't have enough blankets.
Yes, and there's also been some testimony in pieces by the Washington Post, which interviewed several kids who, besides just the physical conditions, right, of frozen sandwiches, as you mentioned, foul-smelling water, the intensification of hunger or sleeping on the cement floor when there aren't mattresses, that children are emerging afraid to be hugged, afraid of the opposite gender because they were separated from, they separated boys and girls and were told that they had to always stay at arm's length, even if they were siblings. Have you also heard reports of that kind of trauma or the effects of that trauma emerging as well?
Well, certainly we are, hearing many accounts of children being traumatized by these separations, and the judge in this case is very aware of that, and that's something that he's been driving home with the government, that the focus here is on reuniting these families as quickly as possible, but the trauma comes from the amount of time, the length of the separation, and that's why they need to hurry up and do this very quickly.
Alan Gomez, we're also hearing that the separation of thousands of children by the Trump administration has created significant new costs for the Department of Health and Human Services. Can you just give us a sense of what this is costing?
Yeah, I mean, it required them to really mobilize and really hire a bunch of contractors to get down to the border, to work as case managers, to put these kids together with their parents. It's forced them to open up new temporary shelters to house all these folks. And the latest estimate we got from Politico just in the last couple of days was about $40 million thus far from HHS to do this. And the estimates for continuing to do this for the next few weeks and possibly the foreseeable future if these folks are required to stay in detention reaches up to $100 million. So this is becoming not just a, you know, sort of a political black eye for the administration, but now we're talking tens of millions of dollars that they're having to spend to correct this zero tolerance policy.
And Alan Gomez is an immigration reporter with USA Today. We're also talking with Julie Small, a reporter for KQED's criminal justice and immigration team. We're getting the latest on the Trump administration's effort to reunite some 3,000 children with their parents after separating them in recent months under the zero tolerance policy. They have to do this by next Thursday. The judge who has been looking over this reunification process has become notably frustrated by the administration's efforts. And we're also learning more about what conditions the kids have been facing. What are your thoughts and questions for our panelists? This is a half-hour segment, so the time to join is now. Call us at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. You can email us at forum@kqed.org or post your thoughts on Facebook, or you can tweet us at KQED Forum. Alan Gomez, one of the things that we've heard about this week as well is that Democrats have proposed the Reunite Act, and our state senator Kamala Harris has been very vocal in trying to reunite kids with their parents as quickly as possible. Can you help us understand what the Reunite Act would do and whether or not it would help speed along this process, you know, along with the judge's order, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, so what this bill would do that she filed, co-filed with Jeff Merkley from Oregon and Catherine Cortez Masto from Nevada, what they're trying to propose is, right, ordering the administration to reunite these kids as a practical matter. I think that's kind of the least of it, because this judge, trust me, he is making sure that that is going to happen. And by the time anything gets through Congress, I think we'll be well past the point of reunification. But I think the focus more of this Reunite Act is setting up a process for the future so that this does not happen again, so that even if there will always be cases, there were under Obama, there were under previous administrations, where parents in immigration detention get separated for their kids for various reasons, obviously not to the extent that we've seen under Trump. But she wants, they're trying to set up a process so that that these families are accounted for, so that they can track them, so it doesn't require this all-of-government approach just to locate them and figure out which parent belongs to which child. They want to establish something called the Office for Locating and Reuniting Children with Parents. They want to redirect $50 million from ICE's enforcement operations and dedicate it to that office. And so it's more about setting up a process for the future to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again.
I also found it interesting that it prohibits the Department of Homeland Security from using information, DNA information. What are the concerns around the DNA testing?
Yeah, that's been one of the concerns for activists from immigration advocacy groups from the beginning of this process, because you know, as mentioned, they were separating kids, sending them into the care of the Department of Health and Human Services, the parents were going to the Department of Homeland Security or to the Bureau of Prisons. So they needed some way to be able to bring them together. The government claims that just using birth certificates and things like that sometimes doesn't really settle it, because people can forge documents, people can lose documents and just claim that somebody's their child. So they've been using DNA testing to verify the parentage in many cases. But the concern has been that the government would then hold on to that information and use it possibly at some point later on for enforcement purposes. So the ACLU, in the course of this court hearing, has been asking the judge to require that all these DNA tests, once they verify that the parentage is legitimate, will then destroy the records so that it's not just sitting there in some government database. And the same thing, Senator Harris is asking for the same thing in this situation where it's only used, where it prohibits them from using any DNA information for enforcement efforts later on.
Well, let's hear from our listeners. Andrea in Saratoga. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about the children that are not eligible to return with their parents. That's the word that's being used on news programs and such. And I'm not sure what that means. What's happening to the kids that can't go back to their parents? Are the parents deported? Can the parents eventually get there to their kids? Can the kids eventually get to their parents?
That's a
great
question,
Andrea. What's happening with those kids?
Julie Small, can you explain why certain kids are being deemed not eligible to be reunited with their parents?
Well, in some cases, yes, parents are still in custody. They might be serving a criminal sentence. They could be deported. We don't know how many parents were deported, but we've certainly heard, you know, anecdotal cases, and there were 12 in that first group of the under fives. There were 12 parents who had been sent out of the country. That's going to put a lot more obstacles into reuniting them, because the parents who have been deported, sometimes with removal orders, the United States government is reluctant to bring them back in. They have to make travel arrangements, and they have to do that whole verification process, you know, remotely at a distance. But I think that the attorneys themselves that brought this lawsuit would like to know more about the denials. They haven't been given, they've said, enough information to determine, you know, whether those denials are accurate.
And we go to Justin in Pleasanton. Hi, Justin.
Good morning. If the Trump administration fails to reunite these children with their parents before the deadline, what consequences will it face in terms of disciplinary action? And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Justin, thanks. Yes, Alan Gomez, I mean, we hear that Sabra is frustrated, but what happens if they don't follow through with his order of the 26th?
Yeah, and this is something I really looked at for a while when they were getting close to missing that first deadline. And it's surprising that the options are rather limited. You know, the image of Jeff Sessions or, you know, the Homeland Security Secretary being, you know, carted off to jail is incredibly unlikely. It's only been tried even once or twice in our history. So, like cabinet secretaries, it's very hard to really put them in jail. There might be a situation where the judge tries to require some of the, you know, lower level operators to hold them in contempt of court and try to get some jail time for them. But there's a basic principle called sovereign immunity where it's very difficult for a government to be sued and to be held accountable in that respect. There are fines. That's a possibility. That's something that he could also try to do. And I think that's why the ACLU proposed that sort of middle ground where they asked. They didn't ask for anybody to be held in contempt when that first deadline was about to be missed. All they asked for was for the government to pay for the mental health counseling of all these kids that they're definitely going to need it moving forward. And I think that was their sort of acknowledgement that there's a limit to what really can happen and what kind of punishment they can hand out, and trying to find another way to punish them that ends up helping these kids in a different way.
And that option of paying for mental health counseling is still on the table, even if Sabra didn't choose to do it. You know, immediately after they missed the deadline.
Absolutely. He didn't rule on it, but he definitely did not shoot it down.
Well, speaking of accountability, this listener asks, I've seen some reports that we're paying $800 per day per child. So for that, the children are receiving too little bad food and water. How can ICE and Health and Human Services be held accountable for this? Julie Small, what are attorneys asking for around this, and how is the government explaining this?
Well, the filing that was filed yesterday in Los Angeles is trying to enforce this decades-old settlement. They want to make sure that children are held in the least restrictive environments. They're saying they shouldn't even be in these environments for the length of period of time that they are. They are supposed to get adequate food and water. They are seeking, actually now, they're saying that the government has failed. The government is not taking care of children properly, and they are asking the court to establish a federal monitor, a court monitor, to oversee all these facilities that ICE and also Border Patrol run and keep children in to enforce this settlement and make sure that children are being treated humanely.
So an independent monitor.
Yes, an independent monitor, you know, similar to the federal receiver we had over prison health care in California, somebody who can come in unannounced and make inspections, someone who can directly interview the detainees themselves, children, and get down, find out what's really happening, because the government, apparently, at the same time while these reports of children going without food and water were happening, the government monitors, their own monitors, said, oh, these facilities are providing adequate care.
Well, let's hear next from Hakeem in Palo Alto. Hi, Hakeem.
Hi, yes. This is a follow-up on Andrea's question regarding the eligibility for reunification of families. I've heard several times that parents facing criminal or state charges are deemed ineligible for reunification with their children. My concern is that after separating these asylum seekers from their children, these parents have been put in extenuating circumstances, which may have led to their crimes. And now the federal government is turning around and saying, well, we're not going to reunify you with your children as a result. I was hoping one of the panelists could comment on the nature that some of these parents are facing in their criminal charges.
Alan Gomez, do you have any insights into this?
Yeah, and I think that comes down to this. Let's say a family comes across the border, a father and a child. They get separated at the border. The father faces federal immigration crimes, or is charged with illegal entry as a crime. Generally, what they've been doing in a lot of cases is that's very quick. They charge them a small fee for having done so, and in some cases, they release them on parole. I think what's happening in this situation is where that person then goes out into the community, according to the government, then commits some kind of crime, is totally unrelated to immigration, is then arrested and facing some sort of state or federal charge and is being held in a state or federal prison. And obviously kids can't be held in those conditions. So that's why they're ineligible. And what the judge has said is that, okay, that's great. But once that person is done with either released or that person is done with whatever sentence they've been given, they will be part of the class. They will have to be reunited. They just obviously don't have to be reunited by this deadline.
Hmm. Well, let's go to Nikki in Los Altos. Hi, Nikki.
Hi. My question or comment basically relates to the cruelty that is exhibited by the administration. And, you know, question really is, how does the party that seems to be all about family values do what they do? And in particular, you know, we saw this opinion piece last night from the Washington Post about the White House policy being, you know, quote, whatever, quoting John Kelly. So how does that happen?
Well, I think that's also what's driven a lot of this, Alan Gomez and Julie Small, is both the legal questions and the moral questions that surround the separation of families. Julie Small, we just have 30 seconds left, and I'm curious if you know what the aggressive schedule is that's been set by this judge moving forward. If you could just quickly give us a sense of what's next.
Yeah, I wanted to let you know that they've already identified 2,500 kids, and they've been pretty clear. They've found their parents. They've made a match. And I think that in the last 48 hours, there have probably been up to 1,000 families that have been reunited. We're waiting to hear from the government. They have to file a status report later this week. They will have to show that they've identified all the parents by Tuesday. And by Friday, they have to create the next list of parents. They're going to move down to paroled parents, people who were in ICE custody and released. They're starting with this group that is still in ICE custody.
I see.
Reunifying families.
And all
detention.
Things that you are watching closely, KQED's Julie Small, USA Today's Alan Gomez. Thank you both. Stay
Thank
with
you.
Us. I'm Mina Kim.